This is an interview with Wolfgang Wengler for the Youngstown State University project, Germany in the 1930s and 40s, by Stephen R. Ard at the Manicore Club, 831 Mahoning Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, on the 12th of May, 1981, at approximately 8 p.m. Do you want to tell me where you were born?
I was born in Liegnitz, Germany, which is now considered East Germany or Poland, depending on how they run the borders. I was born in February 1934.
Okay. What did your father do?
My father worked on the German railroad, which is a government-run railroad.
Okay, and what did he do for it?
He started out as a conductor on a train and ended up being a yardmaster at the Frankfurt Railroad.
When was he a yardmaster? Do you remember about the approximate time?
Well, he became a yardmaster approximately 1952 or 53.
Okay, up till that time he was a conductor.
He was, if you call a conductor on a passenger train, but he was running the
freight
trains. And I'm not quite sure what you call a person like that on a freight train.
Okay.
He was in charge of the train, mostly freight trains.
What did your mother do?
My mother was a housewife.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What was it like growing up?
Well, so I can remember, my dad got transferred to Sagan, which was in Germany, in Schlesien, Germany, in, I believe, 1941, and which was during the wartime already. And we grew up we were six children in a family at the time. 7-1 came 1952. And we grew up in sort of a military state, because that's what Germany was during that time, as far back as I can remember. My older sister had to go to do housework in, as how shall I say, she was something which she had to do, to go and do housework for a family for a certain amount of time during a year. And the boys had to help on the farm, to do farm chores for the farmers once you were like 14 years old. Once you became, well, during the school time, actually, before I became about 9 or 10 years old, it's very little what you really remember. But the most what I do remember was during those last years during the war. And I remember what the army tried, were having maneuvers and practicing, and us as children would run along with the soldiers, and especially on parades and things like that. And we enjoyed it in a way, because it was something which you never seen before, and it was, to us, it was fun.
Okay. can you tell me a little bit more about this work that was assigned to your... Where are you in terms of the family rank? Oldest, middle?
Well, I'm the third. I have an older sister who, she was born in 1929. My father was born 1930. And I was born in 1934. So I was the third one. And my sister, she had to perform that housework for people. Like being not really a maid, but taking care of children, okay? Like Kindermädchen, which means like a babysitter. And most likely for families who had a lot of children. And my brother, who was at the time where I turned 10, he was then 14 already. He started to go on then to what you call the Hitler Youth. And he had to go to a farm during the summer vacation and work like the 4 or 6 weeks summer vacation. He had to work on a farm for a farmer. I'm not quite sure if they received any compensation, but they were fed very well, and a lot of times they got a lot of food to take home with them. Depends on how the farmer was.
Did you find that you were lacking food? I mean, did this help? I mean, was there a shortage of food that this was a way of acquiring more?
Well, it was not a matter of needing more food or acquiring more food. You only were allowed a certain amount because everything was on, you were allowed so much food per week or per month, per person, according to what the family had was working. If he was working as a, what you call, heavy duty work, like construction work or something like that, he was allotted extra portions of meat and things like this, which most likely gave him more strength to do the hard kind of work, where somebody sitting in the office wasn't quite that much allotted to. And when you have 5 or 6 kids in the family, you do need a lot of food. So food was not what you call plentiful during, you know, while the war was still going on. Now, I presume later on we're going to get to the point right after the war. So
okay, we'll talk about that then. Tell me about the schools you went to.
Well, the schools, what I remember in Sagan, we went to school, and really during the war, mostly it was just learning your arithmetic, and like I started out with the old German script, which is called now Latin, which very few people are able to read or write anymore. I'm fortunate enough to still be able to read it. I can't write it anymore. But as I went through our minutes here at our club, I found out that I'm one of the only ones who still is able to read the old Latin, what the old Germans were reading. And this is what we got taught at first, and then it changed over into the normal reading, which is now like typewriting and things like this, normal letters. And in the morning, we got up and I don't even remember if we said prayers or we were singing a song. that part I really wouldn't know anymore.
Can you remember some of the kids? Were there a lot of kids in the school, or did the war hamper?
No, the kids were just about the same as, well, I went I started going to school during the war, so it really, I don't remember any difference other than as it became later on in the war, where they started the bombings. I remember some of the teachers had to go to war, and the classes got a little bit more filled up, I guess, due to the fact that not enough teachers were there to teach, so.
Did as a child, you ever hear stories about Adolf Hitler? What did they tell you about him?
As a child, Adolf Hitler was what you would call over here like the American hero, okay? He was in Germany, the hero. He put people to work. Everybody was working. People were living decent. He provided housing for the people. If you had a lot of kids, he provided extra money and extra food for large families, because this is what he wanted, to have large families. Actually, you're well rewarded to have more kids than less. So,
did your mother ever receive, or your family ever receive, any of these medals or awards for the number of children in your family?
Well, no. We were just one short.
One short.
I believe the awards were given out when you had six kids. If I remember it properly, I believe they started, like, when you had six kids, you would receive, sometimes even Hitler came and visited the families if he was around, and if you were a good party member and things like this. So, or you had somebody in the family who was a party member, and, you know, it was all party connected in a way, but still, the working man and woman, if they had a lot of kids, Hitler would come around and, you know, visit the family and give them a medal and wish them well.
Did you read about that in papers, or how did you find out that he did this?
No, we heard it from other people. And from newspaper, where we read somebody receive a medal like this.
Mm-hmm. What other things did you hear about Hitler in terms of his hero, as a hero?
Well, I have to explain that, okay?
Okay.
I've done a lot of reading, okay, since I'm here in the United States, okay, and I'm very much interested in everything, and I have to put it in the right perspective, because when I speak about Hitler, okay, I have to speak at that time, how I felt at that time, not how I feel now, or what I know now, because there's a heck of a lot of difference between what you know now and what you knew at that time. And what you were allowed to know, what you were allowed to do, what you were allowed to say. So at that time, me as a child, 10-year-old boy, I suppose he truly was a hero. If he would have came to town, I would have been trying to be the first one to shake his hand. I would have been very proud. I always was proud of the fact that my dad shook hands with Hitler while my dad was working on the Autobahn. Before he went to the railroad, he was working on building the Autobahn. And Hitler came and shook everybody's hand, and my dad would tell us the story that he shook Hitler's hand, you know, which made us at the time very proud, naturally. If he would have had a picture of my dad shaking his hand, that would have been even more so. It is something which no matter at what time period you are, it is something which you take as what it is at that time.
Can you remember how your dad described it? Can you remember what he told you? How he explained it to you when he saw you met Hitler?
Well, it usually came in the evenings when stories were told, and he told about the time where he was working on the Autobahn and Hitler came by and he stopped and shook everybody's hand.
Was it a scheduled stop or did he just come by and just decide to stop at that point?
Well, that part I really wouldn't know exactly. Usually on something like this, it was probably something which was scheduled due to the fact that it's like the opening of a new bridge or something like this where government officials are attending and the workers standing around naturally, and well, President Reagan would open a new highway and the workers are there naturally, he would shake hands with some of the workers, which would be in context but the same.
How did your dad talk about politics a lot during the war?
No. My dad was in a way against politics. He didn't care for it too much. He had a brother who was in politics, who was in the city we were living in Saga, was pretty high up in politics, in the Nazi party, sort of. And my uncle tried to get my dad to join the party, and my dad was almost forced into joining if he wanted to advance in getting higher up to the point what he, after the war, finally did make. But during the war, the only way you would get an advance would be if you belonged to the party, and then you would get a promotion to a higher rank, and be it in railroad industry or any place else. That was the way of life. And my uncle tried to talk my dad into joining the party, and my dad kept refusing. And he made it through the war without joining. It was very difficult for him because his brother, first of all, was in the party and he was getting pressure from his boss, plus from his brother, to join. And he couldn't advance without joining. And not signing up, enough. Nobody really made you join, just like our unions. Nobody makes you join, but you won't work unless you do join. So it's pretty much the same way. They talk to you, they try to tell you this is best for you, you should join, you should belong to the party, it's for your own good, which it was. Because if you didn't join, you didn't get the higher post. That's as simple as that.
You know, you talked about, like, at that time, people did perceive Hitler as a hero. How did you perceive the Nazi Party?
Well, as a kid, I really couldn't say this. Anybody really cared for what you call the brown shirts, the Nazi Party, or the SS, or whichever way you put it. The Nazi Party, what it's called now, okay, what I can see under the Nazi Party at this time. I really can't say this. People were too happy with it. Well, I was 10 years old. The things at that time started already with being not what they're supposed to be, and people told stories and things which some of them probably were true, some of them probably were not true. Now what I'm talking about is quite a bit different. Now we know these things were true, and this at the time, I really can say this to people, for I as a child had no true good feeling about it. You were afraid of it.
Then kind of Hitler and the party weren't the same thing. In other words, Hitler is perceived one way and the party is perceived another. Is that correct?
Probably in a way, yes. How exactly to distinguish the two? It's kind of difficult to, unless you lived in an area like that, it's very difficult to imagine how something like that can be. Living through it, there's things, times you go through, things you see, you believe what is being told to you, and the propaganda which is being put out, you believe. But the people around you, what they do, you also believe. So you have two beliefs, one's supposed to. Now you know this one and the other were the same, where at the time you could not put both of them in the same perspective. It is impossible to see this. Hitler was the head of the nation, okay? The party, knowing what parties are now, is complete different things at what you would imagine as a child. You only see a uniform. You know, if you talk bad against them, you either get beat, kicked, or even thrown in jail. And later on in times, if you were talking against the party or against the Nazi party, you could end up being thrown in the concentration camp. So naturally there's a fear which you do not connect with the head of the state at the same time. It's something which like for instance the Youngstown Police Department, okay, and the mayor. Really, the mayor is the head of the police department, yet the police department doesn't do always the thing which the mayor would like or would want. I mean, they arrest you for speeding, and you can't get mad at the mayor, right?
Right.
Even though it's the same thing, but unless you know exactly what you read later on in history, at the time, it is very hard to comprehend why the differences are.
Can you tell me some of the stories? You mentioned that you had heard stories. Can you remember what some of those things were that you heard about the Nazi Party?
Well, we heard about people being taken to concentration camps because they talked bad against the party, and they have done things against the party. To be specific, I really couldn't say anything specific where what a person has said, because there again you come into the conflict of the person who's saying it. If that person would say it specific, would end up also going to concentration camp. So it is like, well, the parents were talking about some, the kids would listen and only probably get part of it.
Go back. We were talking about the stories you had heard about the Nazi Party, and you had mentioned the camps and the fact that people were sent.
Well, the first time we in our family really found out about camps or anything of that sort was since my dad worked on the railroad, he had to drive the cargo cars or trains or freight trains from city to city. And on one occasion, he had a cargo train full of people and not knowing what really happened or what really was true or false, even though the adult people heard some stories, but nobody was willing to talk about it. My dad, one of the persons in the train asked for some water. My dad took his canteen and wanted to hand it to him. And one of the guards told my dad, "You give him the water, you might as well go in with him, because that's where you're going to end up." My dad asked why. He said, "Well, you're not allowed to give him any water. You're not allowed to talk to him. You're not allowed to be with him. Now, you want to be with him? You can't give him the water. I open the door and you go in." And that's the way it was. So that's where my dad found out is some of the stories, what the adults were telling each other about camps where they took people, where through. Now, what they done with people, nobody really found out. People were guessing, and how accurate the guesses were, you really, there's no way of really knowing how accurate the guesses were, unless you put what you know now into with it. So, as a child, I remember my dad telling us about the story where he almost got put on the train, and he would have been one of the Jewish people because he hated him, so he's called a Jew, naturally. And anybody who would talk against the party or would campaign against the party or probably even somebody who wasn't liked by somebody and somebody else tried to get into his business, they would just send him away, call him a Jew, put a star on him, and send him away.
As a child in school, were you ever told to tell the teachers or anybody if family members were talking against the party?
I cannot remember in school, no.
Were you ever told that anywhere?
We were told this this happened, especially in the Hitler Youth. They were, again, if you come to that point of how accurate something is, it depends on how rotten the person is who is doing that project, okay? There were good people in the Hitler Youth or in the German Youth who only wanted the best for the children, who taught the children the best they know how. The Hitler Youth and the German Youth was a group comparatively like the Boy Scout. You would go in, you belong, you had a uniform, you wore the uniform, and you were taught almost all the traits which you are being taught in the Boy Scout. And if most likely if the Germany would not ended up in a war, the Boy Scout and the German Youth would have been like one group in different nations working in different ways, but with the same principle. It ended up being more political in the later years, especially the Hitler Youth, which turned into a political sidearm where you were taught politics. This Hitler was the only thing to believe in, what he said was true, and you had ambitious leaders who wanted to get up in the party, who would do anything to ensure their way up the ladder. So how true it is with all the people, I would say it's very wrong to presume that all the leaders in the Hitler Youth were bad. There were probably more good ones than bad ones. But the few bad ones who done things like trying to coerce the youth into talking bad against their parents or telling what the parents are talking about at home, or almost anything else, it comes out to the same thing. How bad the person is who is doing it and for what purpose they are doing it.
Let's go back to the bombing. Now, you said in school that you were in an area that was bombed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can you describe that? What did you do at that time?
Well, the first time I remember any kind of bombing, or, well, I didn't really see the bombing at that time. I was in Sargon, and they were bombing airplane factory in the next town, and we seen the bombers fly over, and we seen one of our German fighter planes go up and shoot three of the bombers down, and we seen the bombs fall towards that other town. We were standing up in the open field watching it. Later on, as we had to travel from Schlesien, where we were forced, German army was going to fight for the city we were living in, because we had a tank camp, an armored camp, Air Force camp. Well, there were three different army camps in that town, plus all the prison camps around town. And they were going to fight for the town, so they evacuated all the civilian population. And as we were sitting under the train in one town in Leipzig, we were sitting across from an ammunition factory. We seen the stars coming down, what you call the illuminating stars, which lit up the skies or lit up the whole city. And we seen the bombs coming down, and last minute our train got pulled out into a sheltered area, which was like a big mountain and railroad track going in between the mountains. And Leipzig was pretty much leveled at that time, and we seen bombs coming down, and we were sitting there, and it's pretty scary. Just sitting there, not being able to go no place, and knowing this any minute could be your last.
Where you were at was not hit, though?
No.
Okay. Were there any major fires involved with this bombing?
Wait.
Can you describe the fires?
Well, we were sitting outside town, and we seen the whole town burning. In a way, but we were too far away. I mean, we weren't even allowed out of the train because they didn't want to alarm anybody. You know, the airplanes were flying low. You didn't want to get shot, and they didn't want to notice people were in the train because this is what they would have been shooting for. So we weren't allowed out of the train, so all we could see is through small slats in the doors or something. You just see the fight. You really, I mean, I was never in an area where it was that close to a fire of a big city burning.
Where did the train eventually take you?
we ended up in Ege, which is in now it's Czechoslovakia, but at the time it was Sudetenland, which was part of Germany. And from there we were transferred to a small castle outside of Ege, where we stayed until the American army came in. We experienced right there how a town is being taken by the American soldiers and then retaken by the German soldiers, almost without a shot being fired. Looking at it as a child was almost comical. The patrol of American soldiers came in, and while they came in one end of the farm community, German soldiers walked out the other end. Okay, the Americans told us to put up the white flags, and well, everybody raised the white flag, the white sheet. They said, if you don't leave the white flag up, we're gonna bomb you, gonna shoot grenades in and destroy your community. Well, they walked out, in came the Germans, told us, take the white flags down or we're gonna destroy your town, okay? That went on 3-4 times. And we were in the courtyard of the castle, like, and some grenades exploded, and I just took a step forward, and someone hit behind me. We found a grenade splinter about that big, red hot. I put my fingers on it while I tried to pick it up. And that's about as close as I came up with any kind of fire action. It's a little bit scary.
Okay, now is your whole family there with you, or?
Oh, yeah.
The whole family, and your father too?
Yeah.
Okay, they evacuated the entire. Now, did your father ever go back to work there, or did they, what did people do when they were?
Well, my dad was working on the railroad, and because of that, we were transferred on the train out of Sagan, and we ended up in Ege. And my dad had to go from Ege then, well, he had to go back into Ege and work on the railroad there. And then he got transferred to another town where he had to go to. He was quite a bit with us, but he still had to go on his own to be away from us in order to be transferred to another town until he was able to get accommodations for us. So, and with 5 kids or 6 kids, that wasn't easy. So it was kind of touch and go at the time. We didn't know if we were going to come back because the war was still going on. And we really didn't know where we are standing, and no food, because that was towards the end of the war. Your carts weren't any good anymore because the grocery stores wouldn't give out any groceries because they couldn't get any. So what we were eating was, if we were able to steal some potatoes from the farmer, or go out and find dandelion, make dandelion salad. We used the salt which was used for the animals. We used that, well, my mom used that in order to put a little bit of a taste in it. No fats or oils or anything like this. So it was pretty meager meals.
Now, were you in Czechoslovakia or the Sudetenland then at the end of the war?
Well, the end of the war came, we were in Sudetenland, and as soon as the war was over, Czechoslovakia claimed Sudetenland back for Czechoslovakia, and we were allowed to leave since my dad was working on in what was then considered like the American sector, or how they had it divided. We were allowed to cross the border, and we had everything packed up in on a horse buggy like what we had with us, and which was a change of clothes and some bedding. We were allowed to cross the border, and a couple of days later they closed the border completely because nobody was allowed to leave, come or go, which was the start of the Iron Curtain in a way.
And where did you go back to then?
We ended up going first through a couple of smaller towns where my dad was working until we ended up in Frankfurt.
Okay. Can you describe things in Frankfurt at that time?
When we first came to Frankfurt, we were living in a former army camp, which was how shall I describe it? There was a big waterworks in Frankfurt, and which was fed by the River Main. And right next to the river, they had cannons put up for anti-aircraft cannons. It was like a camp, big hill, mountain, where they had ammunition underneath the ground and some barracks and stuff. And we were living in the barracks. Because the army was dismantled, so we were living there. There was like a refugee camp. And each family was allowed like one room. So we were six of us, well, actually eight of us in one room. And
was food plentiful there, or are you still having trouble with it?
No, you were allowed a rationing of your food rationing cards.
Who gave you that card?
Well, that came from like the city government or whatever was reigning at the time. It was a provisional government established by the American army, but still German people were administrating some way. How exactly, I don't have any idea.
Did you come in contact with the American Army?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How would you describe that to me?
Well, the first time we came in contact with the American Army was when we were still in Czechoslovakia. As the American Army finally took over the town and they moved through the town, okay, they set up a kitchen in an area where it was convenient for them. And as kids, we roamed around and we seen the food, but we thought was wasted. We told my mom what they were throwing away since we didn't have any food. My mom said, why don't you go down and ask him if he can have some? And we ended up, my brother and myself, made good friends with the cook. And they were throwing out the coffee grind. After they cooked one pot of coffee, they took the coffee grind, threw it on the dump, okay? Well, we told that my mom, she said, here's a bucket, go get it, okay? Because she hadn't had any good coffee other than, it wasn't even coffee. And so we done that. We got the coffee grind and got the good stuff off the top and brought it home. She cooked some more coffee. Until we made friends with the cook, and we seen how they were cooking the chicken. The wings were thrown on the trash, and the stomachs were thrown, you know, on the necks. And that's all, in a way, almost like a delicatessen in Germany at the time. So we asked the guy in charge of the kitchen if we could have that what they're throwing away. So we ended up getting quite a bit of stuff from the American cook who was in charge of that kitchen.
Let's stop it there. Let's turn to side two of the tape. I want side two. We're talking about your contact with the American Army. Did you know English?
No.
How did you make friends then with
Well, that cook spoke a little bit of German and mostly sign language. We told him, but he was thrown away, and we asked by sign language if we could have it. And we showed him that we were six kids and we were hungry. And he made himself understood, and we made ourselves understood, and we got what we wanted.
How did you become friends? I mean, did you do little odd jobs, or did you just hang around?
Well, we just hung around. They asked for, like, if he had a sister, and asked for a four line. We talked about, you know, just, we were six kids at home, but they all small, and it's just a conversation which is being held between an adult and a child, but small talk in a way, and some of them ask us what we felt about the American Army or what we felt about Hitler and things like this. I remember we were the same way as what I'm saying now. There's no other way you can put it. If you felt that somebody was trying to take you into something, just didn't answer.
Did you, when you first met, I mean, was there any fear of a conquering army in your country? When you first came in contact with him, did you hide before, you know, you came out to see him or anything like that?
Well, I really cannot say that we hid. We stood in the street as they were walking in, and we were there. Why? I don't know. it was something which partly. Whatever you want to call it, it is some, unless you were there, it's really hard to describe what the true feeling is. As a 10-year-old child, what do you feel about somebody coming in? Stories were told about not accepting candies because the candies are poison. Don't accept any food from them because you're going to die from it. They're going to shoot you, they're going to murder you and everything else. They're going to rape the women, and I mean, all kinds of stories were told. Some of the things which probably were true, we had one incident in a way which brought us over to feeling a little bit safer. There was one lieutenant who probably got a little bit cocked one night, well, got a little bit drunk one night. And he knocked on the window of he met, apparently, and liked, and he just wanted to talk to him. And even the American Army said at the time that he did not try to assault anybody or anything else. Happened to see him knock on the window. He got court-martialed, got stripped of his rank. He was forced to sleep in a one-man tent by himself for an extended period of time, only because he knocked on the window of a German woman. But that was during the occupation time, the first few weeks. And the German people knew then this, they were in a way safe. This, if somebody would step out of line, this, they would get punished. Now the American soldier would get punished for stepping out of line, which in other towns, possibly due to the fact of, and we had others, we heard other stories, Lucas was also doing the occupation time. She was running away from town. She got shot, and nobody was allowed to visit her until she died. Similar incidents probably did happen with the American Army, and good things happened with the Russian Army. During wartime, it is very hard to see what really, who is good, who is bad. It depends on the commander in charge of the troops, what he's doing, his troops are allowed to do. If he's rotten, the troops are going to be rotten. If he's good, he's going to see to this, his troops are going to stay good, and anybody getting out of line is going to get punished. We met many German people, many American soldiers, who were so hateful against Germans that they wouldn't even talk to you. After we got to Frankfurt, we would go around town begging for cigarettes for that, because you couldn't get any in Germany, and a lot of times if the people we asked, the American soldiers we asked, they didn't like German people, they would holler at us, scream at us, try to kick us, yet other ones would give us candy, cigarettes, whatever we asked for. So it's pretty much both ways. You can't say all of them were good, you can't say all of them were bad. During wartime, if you see your best friend being shot down by a German, there's no way you're going to have any luck or any Germans left. And the same way on the other side, if you see your family being shot down by an American, how can you go and say, well, alright, I want you to do it now, no matter what you've done. I can't say that I felt that way at the time. All we were looking for at the time was for a handout, for a candy ball, chewing gum, a cigarette for that. So we begged for it, and we stole it.
How eventually did you end up over here in the United States?
Well, my family, in a way, my dad always was kind of an adventurer. His father went to South Africa as a scholar, Schutzpolizei, which is the German officer who went over there to control the country, which was in hand at the time. And I'm probably just like my dad, always wanted to go, but since my dad was married, he couldn't go, so. And after the war, I was living in Germany. I had to go to work as a painter. I learned the painting trade. And since we were from Schlesien, even the German people really didn't care for us that much. They didn't want anybody from another part of the country taking their jobs away, and there was always some sort of a hatred. Maybe a hatred is not exactly the right word to use. Disagreement of what is right, what you should do, you should go back to the country where you came from or the place where you stayed. So I really never felt that much at home in Frankfurt, because I was from Lazy, and the speech, the slang always showed it. But I never, as a kid and growing up as a young man, I really never had any problem. But it wasn't my home. And I met my wife in Frankfurt, and even though we didn't get married until we got visit and she's safe. If I wanted a million, I had to come over here too, which I did. But that's how I ended up actually in Vienna. And then I got a job in Nile. And after I served 2 years in the American Army, I ended up buying a house in Youngstown.
Can you think of anything else that might be pertinent to our discussion here that we haven't talked about or should have?
Well, I really, some of the feelings I probably have as I plan, like move from our hometown away and out of Memphis. All the family were in the train and somebody wanted to get out of the train to go to a toilet. The German SS officer threatened to shoot him. They wouldn't get back into the train. And a little bit later on, we were sitting in an open field. We see American and English bombers flying over. Feeling you get when you see all enemy planes flying over you from one end of the horizon to the other, nothing but planes. The feeling you got, I don't know, as a child, just probably amazement, where thinking back on it, you wonder what it's all about. Then ending up, I remember my father almost got put in jail because he said the American troops landed in Normandy. He heard the American troops landed and he spoke it in a gathering of people and they almost put him in jail because he said it. And at their office, that's not true, nobody landed. Things like this kind of stick in your mind if you're allowed to speak the truth and if you do, what happens to you? Which comes back to the same question on what the people really believed during the war and what was the truth, how much of the truth the German people believed. I remember the Hitler Youth collected all the weapons, long knives, anything which could be used in self-defense in a way. And we used to guard over it in a big storeroom. It was probably as big as this building, but 9-foot ceiling, heated up to the ceiling. All kind of pistols, rifles, knives. That was all collected in the name of needing the gun for protection of the Reich to send to the front. And looking at it now, how can you send a 22 pistol, 25 pistol, and a 32 pistol, and a 38 pistol to the front? How do you get ammunition to them? But they collected them all on a false pretense in order to get them out of the hands of the people, so the people couldn't talk against the government. No, now, looking back on times, you really can see how the government or the party was using the people, telling falsehoods and exploiting them by just telling them they needed it for the war. And in all truth, they only were taking it away from the people, but it couldn't be used against them.
Have you ever read any of the literature from the party, let's say, like Alfred Rosenberg? Have you ever read any of his? Did your family ever, did dad read any of his?
party, or did he vote with one of the other parties? Did he talk about it?
No, he didn't talk about it. For a simple reason, if you just were afraid to talk about it. Now, so you weren't sure who was going to turn you in. In my family, it was always what you do because you believe in it. And you do it because you feel it's right. We never discussed who you voted for, why you voted for it, or how come. It is just, this is your private affair. And that's what you've done at the time. Since my dad never belonged to the party, I would say I doubt very much that he voted for the party.
Unless there's anything else you can think of, well.